Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you very much. Hello, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you here with us. Today, we're going to welcome back Lorraine Moore. Lorraine has been with us before. She was here last week, by the way. She's the founder of a fabulous company in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. She is the founder of Accelerate Success. And what she does is she works with CEOs and the owners of small and mid-sized companies and corporations and their boards to help them get greater success in virtually all aspects of their business. And she works with companies from all industries. She helps her clients with, you know, such difficult things like CEO succession, board governments, leadership development, strategy and marketing. She knows the story well because she's been a corporate executive herself for almost 30 years, and she brings a lot of real-life experience to her job with her. She's had run Accelerate Success. It's been her firm now for over 8 years, and she loves what she's doing. She's highly successful, and the people who come to her and ask for her help love what she does. It's a pleasure to have her back with us again. We'll talk with her about all of these various things that she performs with various companies and what makes her so unique. Her background is quite extraordinary, to say the least. So let's welcome her back again, Lorraine Moore of Accelerate Success, headquartered in Calgary, Alberta, in Canada. Good morning, Lorraine. Nice to have you with us. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm good to be here.
Well, you know, it's a charm for us to have you back again. You were with us a week ago in a marvelous discussion about your practice. I'm interested a little bit more in your own personal story of what got you into this. You know, there's so many people who offer their services helping other companies and corporations, you know, like business coaches and things like that. But your story is remarkable yourself, 30 years in the corporate arena. What got you into doing this, first off? Why did you decide to make the switch? How would you answer that?
Yeah, it was a combination of factors. I give credit really to a couple of people, a CEO of an organization and an executive in another company who approached me while I was still working full time in a large Fortune 100 company. And they asked for my help and they asked for my business advice on something. And so I agreed to do that and realized that I had the ability to really make a meaningful contribution to other businesses. But more than that, I think that was just what kind of got me started. But I wanted to make a bigger contribution and have a broader impact. And I'd had the opportunity to work in multiple lines of business, so at very senior levels. So I'd run technology departments. I'd been involved in sales and marketing. I'd run operations. I'd been involved in mergers and acquisitions and divesting parts of companies. And I realized that I had a really wide breadth of experience and I could help more companies and have a bigger and more meaningful impact if I went out on my own.
Well, that's a very good answer. Obviously, you know, one looks at you and your background and think we have stories about why it's so hard for women to break the curtain and get up into the executive suite. Obviously, you've done extraordinarily well. Is your experience typical in Canada compared with, you know, companies here in the United States? Did you find it hard for you to reach the upper echelon in these companies that you worked for?
When I was with TD Bank, it was not as difficult. That organization was and continues to be really purposeful about identifying talent and promoting people as well. In the banking and insurance industries, financial services, probably 70% of the employees are women. Now, that's in the overall organization. As you get more senior in any of those industries, it gets smaller and smaller percentages, so that women usually only hold about 1% of the senior roles in many cases. So I didn't find it as difficult there, but it is still difficult. It was around, I don't know, 1970 or 1971 was the year of the woman internationally. And I remember because my mom bought my sister and I T-shirts. We were just kids. And she was celebrating all of the opportunities that were going to exist for us that didn't exist for her. And I'm stunned, actually, with how little progress, relative progress, we've made in North America. I was able to do it within TD, and then I was able to move into the oil and gas industry and hold senior roles. But it is still challenging. We're making progress, but not as quickly as I would have expected.
Well, that's a great response. No question about it. So let's talk a little bit about what you do with Accelerate Success. Who are the kinds of clients who come to you? And I gather it comes, you know, it's across the board. You've worked in so many different industries. You really are capable of helping executives in almost any company in any industry because you've had such broad experience. Who do you find are those who are most likely to come to you, and what are they seeking when they come for your advice?
Most often it is CEOs of mid-sized organizations, and that can range from, I guess, fairly small, $50 million a year in annual revenues to about $3 billion. They come to me through referrals and introductions for the most part. That's where I get most of my work. They come to me because they're facing issues, they're facing challenges. They've heard that I bring a great breadth of experience. They've heard that I don't sugarcoat anything. Sometimes they come to me because they want to improve the relationship with their board. Or they feel like the strategy that they've created for the organization is somehow lacking or missing, or they'll bring me to meet their board and work on the strategy development. So that would be the most frequent.
You know, that's an interesting aspect. I've talked to many people in your line of work, but I've never heard anyone refer to the fact that you're there. One of the key things is to help the CEO have a better relationship with the board. How does that work? Does the CEO know he has a problem with the board members and is not quite sure how to go about, you know, making his connection with them more positive? That's a real interesting aspect that you talk about.
Yeah, there's a variety of things that can happen. So oftentimes the board chair will be in the role for a period of time, and then the chair changes. And suddenly for the CEO, it feels like, okay, this person expects different things. They're asking different questions. The conversations don't feel as friendly at the boardroom table. Suddenly my performance doesn't, they don't seem to be as happy with it as they used to. So it can be that kind of situation. It can be the board chair or members of the board suddenly start saying, oh, I think we need to bring in a consultant and get a look at what you're doing with your operations or how you're doing with your leadership practices, things like that. So then that suggests to the CEO, oh, they think that I'm missing something, or they're thinking that they need some more information from the outside. Maybe they're going to tell me I'm not doing what I'm expected to do. Or a member of the board or the board chair suddenly asks for more meetings. I want to start meeting once every 3 weeks for an hour. Whereas before that, you know, maybe they met four times a year for half an hour in advance of a board meeting. So something has shifted, or they're a new CEO and they want to create a strong relationship, or they're a CEO, they have their own company, they've held it for a period of time, and they realize, okay, I need to create an advisory board, or I need to bring some people around the board table that aren't just my wife, because we've been running the company together, and a few other people. So how do I go about establishing a good board? What do I look for in board members, Lorraine? So it can vary.
And does it have to do with the fact that the profits are not as high as the board members would like to see? Does it all begin with what the bottom line is? Or there are other factors that the board become aware of that make them have questions about how the CEO is doing?
Yeah.
In other words, how involved are the members of the board? That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, it varies. If private equity owns a company, then it is all about the revenue and the numbers.
Right.
And that's the pure focus, sometimes at the expense of other things like capital investment, for the future in research and development because they're all about the immediate returns. But it's not always to do with revenue. Sometimes the board will bring me in because they'll say I'm publishing an article on this in the near future. But the board will say the CEO seems really defensive. Every time we bring ideas to them, they explain everything and it feels like they're on their back foot and they're defensive and we don't like that. Or they'll come to me and say, Lorraine, the board split. Half the board, roughly, feels like the CEO is doing a really terrific job and she has raised revenue and the staff retention is really good and our clients seem happy. But the other half of the board feel like she shouldn't be here anymore. They think she doesn't listen to our ideas. And so we're not really, maybe it's the chair of the HR committee says, or the board chair says, we need an outside opinion because this board is split. And, kind of what's the right answer? So sometimes I'm brought in those situations as well.
Wow, those are difficult situations. So the bottom line is, what do you do to help that CEO, your client?
One of the things I do is, and I guess it's a style, but I'm very honest. I'm very good at observing behavior. So as an example, if the CEO says, here is how I am providing direction to my leadership team. Here are the messages that I'm delivering to them about the strategy and the vision of the organization and what's important and where they should be spending their time. I'll say, okay, that's great. That sounds perfectly on point. And then I will attend executive meetings, so where the CEO is at the table with their executive leadership team, or I'll attend a town hall where they're standing at the front of the room speaking to a whole base of their employees. And then I will give them feedback. And the feedback might be quite positive and say, yep, your messages are very clear, they're on point, you're consistent, that's great. Or I might observe, did you notice that your CFO is looking down at their notes and doodling and all of their body language is suggesting that they don't believe what you're saying or they're not in agreement, but they're not speaking up. Or I observed that when someone raised a counterpoint or a different point of view, you kind of shut that down and you didn't allow for discussion at the table. So people aren't going to continue to bring new ideas to the table. And so you may, you may lose out on some opportunities for innovation. So I'm really good at observing the dynamics and providing the feedback and giving them specific examples so that they can be better. Because I've sat on a number of boards and still do today, if I'm helping a CEO in the relationship with the board, when we have a conversation about something, I can say, if I was the chair and you said what you just said to me, here's how I'd perceive that. So either, you're on top of things, da, 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 or I might perceive it as you're overwhelmed, or here are the words that you used, which I can understand why some of the board members see you as being defensive. I know you're not. I know you're just trying to show that you know what you're doing and you want independence and freedom, but here's some different words you could use so they would understand it that way and not perceive it as defensiveness.
That's good. You obviously get to know that CEO pretty well. You spend a pretty good bit of time with them in the beginning to really get to understand who they are and what they are and how they are leading. So you get a pretty good instinct about it. You would have
That's
to, I think.
That's a great question. Yeah, it varies. I have different ways that I work with any of my clients, and there's more intensive and less intensive options. I'm a very quick study. And somewhere along the line, I was gifted with just this intuitive nature that I can look underneath the words and even the behavior and pick up on what is where it's coming from. That either there's some fear there, whether it's fear that people talk about imposter syndrome. So sometimes I see that the executive is thinking, oh my gosh, any day now somebody's going to catch me out and realize that I'm not actually qualified for this job. Like it must've just been luck because I'm not as good as other people. So I'll see whether it's fear. I'll see whether it's they've lost their passion. In ideal situations, we spend a couple of hours alone out of their office to get them away from the office early on. So 2.5-3 hours, and we just talk about everything. I mean, I have some structured questions and things, but we just put anything on the table. That's really helpful for me, but it's also really helpful for them, because particularly when you're running a mid-size or a small organization, there's so much coming at you all the time that there isn't a lot of thinking time. And most leaders aren't good at stepping away to just think, because they feel like then they're not being productive. And so in best cases, we do that. And then we have regular contact. And then we have another one of those more intensive sessions at 3 months or 5 months or 6 months, partway through the engagement.
How long do you find that you typically work with a CEO? I mean,
mostly,
the engagement, as you pointed out, maybe 6 months. Does it go on beyond that? Could be a year or more?
Yeah, it can be a year. Typically, they're 6 months, and often they'll renew, or they'll go, not go away, but they'll go away, so to speak, figuratively, and implement some of the things that we talked about, and try some of the things. That's an iterative learning process, and then they might engage me again, or it'll be specific, so they have a potential merger opportunity that they're looking at, or they want to restructure their leadership team or something, so I'll come in and work with them for that, on that, for a period of time. But longer isn't always better. Some coaches I know will say, well, my program's are a year, and they don't need to be. You know, if I'm doing my job well, I get in, I give you targeted, helpful advice and tools and resources and language, and then you're off and running. And then when you're, when you want to work with me again, great. I have some entrepreneurs who we've probably worked now. They renew me every, like, they just give me a check twice a year. They're all Americans, interestingly. I love working with Americans. And they've worked with me for 5 years. So sometimes that's the case, but most often it's 6 months, 9 months, and then maybe I get a call from them a year later. That's quite common. Either they have encountered something new, or if they move companies, they'll reach out to me to get started.
You know, there are a couple of interesting things you pointed out. Number one, you mentioned you love working with Americans. I was going to ask you, you're based in Calgary in Alberta. Do you visit the, you obviously have to go to the companies to visit the client to really learn what they do and what it's all about, I presume. So do you fly down to companies, you know, in Minneapolis or San Francisco or wherever here in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Or do you do it all from Canada?
No, I fly down. I was we actually spent the month of January in Phoenix, and while I was down there, one of my former Canadian clients introduced me to someone in the U.S. in Phoenix that I met with to engage with that CEO. So that was really fortuitous. But it's interesting with technology. I mean, yes, I fly down to the U.S. frequently, but using Skype and things like that. We don't need to be live. And you know, while a lot of companies, particularly larger companies, don't like to hear this, companies are not all that different from one another, even if they are in different industries. The organizational politics, the expectations of the board, what motivates people, how you ensure performance, what consumers and clients want, what regulators are expecting up from you. Doesn't matter whether it's a financial services regulator or it's pharmaceuticals, their expectations or their behaviors or actions are pretty much the same. And how you build and maintain relationships and get support from the regulators, for example, is the same from industry to industry. So I don't need to spend a lot of time. But yes, I like working with the Americans because they're just more like, they don't take offense easily. I can just say it like
that's
it
good.
Is, and that's what they want. Yeah.
You know, I can't help but want to ask you a question that it really follows in with what we've been talking about. Do you have any success story examples of someone who was running a company that you worked with? Maybe they were having some kind of problems with the board or whatever, but after working with you for a while, they turn things around and all of a sudden, you know, things are much better for them. I'm sure you must have many of them. Anyone you'd like to explain to me or talk about? No, you know, names,
sure.
Or anything. It's examples.
Yeah,
Give me an example.
Okay. One example would be an organization that was about a $3 billion organization. They're a global franchise. And this particular franchise, the CEO had a number of things going on in his head that he wanted help with. One was he was questioning whether he would have been 58 years old. He was questioning whether he wanted to stay with that business or whether he wanted to sell it. He wasn't sure whether he had his enthusiasm for it anymore. He'd bought into the company about 17 years before. The company had been quite successful. He had a great lifestyle, and he was trying to decide, have I kind of lost my edge? Should I go and do something else? And similar to that, would this be the right time to sell, or are there ways I can increase the value of the organization over the next 3 to 5 years, so if I sold it, I'd get even more money from it? Another one of his questions was that he felt that the executives on his team, he had 5 direct reports, and then they obviously all had people reporting to them. He felt that they just weren't following through on things. He felt that they weren't demonstrating accountability, and he was frustrated. He felt like the organization could be doing better. Those were kind of the main things that he called me in for. And I spent some time working with him, obviously, and working with his executive team, and discovered that his team had a lot of ideas about how to do things differently, and they felt that he wasn't open to implementing or adopting or even trying any of their ideas. So they were feeling underutilized. They were feeling like he was too involved in their work on a day-to-day basis and was dictating how they should run their businesses. And they didn't feel like he was hearing that. And in terms of he holding them to account, him saying, you know, Lorraine, they don't take accountability, he wasn't really holding them to account. He wasn't having courageous conversations when people weren't meeting their commitments. He wasn't clear on what success looked like. They spent a lot of time talking about the activities, the things people were doing on a day-to-day basis. I made X sales calls, whatever their metrics were. They were spending a lot of time talking about metrics, but not actually the outcomes and the deliverables. So I gave him some honest feedback about what I observed of him not hearing their ideas. I worked with his executives to really bring them to a point where they were following through on their commitments, and they were understanding that they needed to first meet his expectations, and then they would actually have the currency to be able to bring new and innovative ideas to the table, and that he would listen to them. Anyway, it was quite successful. He was spending a lot of time having conversations with his people on his team, but he wasn't being really forthright about his frustration or about when they weren't meeting his expectations. And so once he started to do that, rather than having an hour and 15-minute conversations over the course of a month, they could meet once a week for half an hour, and it would be much more targeted. They knew what was expected. He was being more forthcoming. And as a result, the business really took off, and he was re-energized. And that was 3 years ago, and he's still there and still enjoying and increasing the value of the company.
Well, that's a great example, a great example. You know, I want to point out, you have a really great website. It's Lorraine Moore. Let me spell it, Lorraine Moore, Moore.ca for Canada. I got to tell you, when you go on that website and open it up, there's a picture of an extraordinary bridge. Where is that bridge? Do you know the bridge you're talking about?
I do know the bridge you're talking about.
It's a gorgeous bridge. Wow.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. My web guy came up with it as one of the images because we liked the idea of a bridge and helping people cross bridges.
Yep.
But, you know, I don't know.
Well, you should find out because it really is something else. You have a number of bridges on your website that I can tell, you know, your your developer obviously has a thing for bridges, but that is one hell of a bridge. Let me ask you another question that, it was on the top of my mind. Now I can't think of it. It was a great succession. I know what it was. You work with CEOs a lot on succession. I was going to ask you, if you find very often CEOs are somewhat in trouble, is it because you think they were not properly prepared to be the CEO when they got into that job to begin with? Is that a possibility?
Sometimes. What I'm seeing more commonly with succession is that And I really, this is the board's responsibility, or if there is no board, it really, it's the CEO's number one responsibility, is they're not planning for succession. They think about it, and they think, oh my God, the CEO is fantastic. Yeah, we should be thinking about who we're developing in the wings, or, but we'll think about that later. And so when they do get to a point where the CEO says, okay, I'm ready to go and start playing golf more often and step away, they either have not prepared somebody properly yet in the organization. There may be people, but they're 3 to 5 years away from being ready. And so then when they don't get the opportunity, maybe they leave. Or they haven't even thought about what they would want if they're going to go externally. So it's people get caught up and get busy with the day-to-day and lulled into the fact that, okay, the CEO is here, they're great, they're performing, or the CEO is the business owner, and they've got so many other distractions. And then if there's a health crisis or something like that, it's challenging because they hadn't been planning for it.
Interesting. You know, we can't let this pass by. We're running out of time slowly, but you've written a couple of really very interesting books. Your first book was The 360-Degree CEO, Generating Profits While Leading and Living with Passion and Principles. Tell me what that book is about. It's the story of a CEO, how to be a CEO. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the story from a number of CEOs. I interviewed a number of executives across North America. What I was looking for was, to be honest, I was tired of the media stories related to the greed and the unethical behavior that happens. And sure, it does, but I felt there weren't enough inspiring stories out there about CEOs who were living and operating with integrity, who were making tough decisions, sometimes decisions that the board was not supportive of, sometimes decisions that they knew would lose business for them potentially, but decisions that they believed were the right thing to do based on their values and their beliefs. And so I wanted to highlight some of those stories. So there's a number of stories, excerpts from interviews I had with CEOs, and then I also looked for patterns. So what was the same? What did I see repeatedly with these CEOs that I wanted to share and communicate to others? Because those lessons are as useful for someone at the front line of an organization as they are for senior executives. And the people I interviewed were very vulnerable and honest and shared a great deal. So that was a really, really fun putting that together.
And then you have another book called Feet to the Fire, How to Exemplify and Create the Accountability that Creates Great Companies. Quickly, what's that about? I mean, that's pretty explanatory about what it's about, right?
Yeah, it's just I kept hearing over and over and over again from executives and manager levels that they felt like people weren't accountable. They weren't following through on their commitments. And also I hear all the time from clients that that's one of my hallmarks is accountability. And so I wrote a book about creating that accountability because my premise is that if you create accountability, it takes a lot less time. People spend a whole lot of time trying to create it without doing it in a simple, structured way. And so it's time consuming and they don't get the results they want. So I put together some tools about how to do that better.
So you wrote the book. Great idea. Lorraine, I wish we had more time. We've gone through the half hour. I mean, it's just gone by so quickly. I want to point out our guest has been Lorraine Moore. Her corporation, her company, her practice is called Accelerate Success. She's based in Alberta, Canada, but as Lorraine explained, she'll work with you on the telephone, on Skype. She doesn't necessarily have to be in your office all the time, but if it is required, then she'll visit you in person. Wherever your company is. Again, it's lorrainemoore.ca for more information on her company. Great website. I encourage you to go there and learn more about what Lorraine does. So, fabulous company. Lorraine, thanks. I wish we had more time, but unfortunately we are out of time for today. So thank you so much for being with us. And it's just been great chatting with you, and I know this information has been very helpful to a lot of people. So thank you so much.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.
Well, that's it for today, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. See you next time. Till then, take care of yourself and have a great day. Bye for now.